The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Koss, and I've been away for a month. I wanted to do sort of a State of the Union, but don't worry, it's not really a State of the Union address because there's something very, narcissistic about it. Like, oh, everyone needs to hear about everything that Matt's thinking about, specifically the podcast. The podcast was on a bit of a hiatus, mostly because I was away for close to 3 weeks on a trip to Bordeaux, which I will talk about, and Morocco, which I will talk about as well. And now just getting set up, getting interviews for the fall going. Also, a bit of a delay because technical issues that basically come down to, well, I'm a dummy. You get a new computer and you download the latest Audacity and you don't think there'd be issues, but suddenly there are. And I'm going to blame me for most of that because, again, I'm not that bright. But anyway, podcast is getting back up and going. There's going to be some great interviews with some winemakers from Bordeaux, from Morocco. And yeah, I'm going to start just going through some of the top winemakers in Ontario and BC that I haven't interviewed yet. And I'll just do my usual thing where I'm going to look around and find cool people to talk to from the entire world of wine, people that I find interesting, and hopefully you will find interesting as well. So first, this is going to be like a shorter podcast, just me talking about some wines to try, wine moments, experiences, and just what's been going on the last couple weeks. The Bordeaux Marathon, I 100% recommend for anyone who likes to run and also likes wine. The Bordeaux Marathon is a good one to do because it's not as steep as other areas. When we were there doing all the sign-up stuff, you know, when you have to sign up for a marathon and pick up your bib and all that, there's all these kiosks for, hey, come run in Chablis and come run in Beaujolais and run here and run there and run everywhere. And it seems like a great idea. I mean, who wouldn't want to do that? But my advice, check to see the topography because, as anyone knows, wine regions in general are hilly. You know, they don't have to be as hilly as Chianti or, you know, certain parts of the world to still be a pain in the ass. Bordeaux was pretty good, but it did get hilly and it was a hot day. But the fun thing is this was a run more about experiencing life and enjoying the moment and enjoying wine and community. No one is running the Bordeaux Marathon to set a record. I mean, the first couple kilometers, it's so tight, and the width for the track, you're walking. You spent a lot of it early on just walking that marathon. And you're okay with it because you look to the left and the right, and you know what you see? You see all the famous vines. You're right there in the middle of the Medoc. And by the way, I apologize. I keep saying the Bordeaux Marathon. It's actually the Medoc Marathon, if we're going to be accurate about it. So I'll make sure to say that from now on. And you're in the Medoc appellation, and you know, you spend a little bit of time in Saint-Julien, you know, they move from one appellation to the other, but you're there in these famous vines and vineyards, and it's so cool. And there was 22 different vineyards where you could drink out of. I only drank out of about 8 of them, but that was because I injured my hamstring at the beginning of August, so that hurt my ability to properly train. I was in what you would say, I was in very good half marathon shape, fantastic half marathon shape, lousy full marathon shape. So because of that, I'm like, no, I cannot drink at every spot. Now, when you stop at a second growth, yeah, I'm going to try the wine. And I know that might seem snobby, but hamstring not 100%. It got pretty hot. The race started at 9:30, so the sun came out by noon, and it did not leave. So that was it was just a ton of fun, and I would highly recommend it for anyone. You know, you'll make new friends, you'll try crazy wines. By the way, in some of these vineyards, they didn't even offer water. I remember stopping at 2 different vineyards, going, "Can I get water?" And like, "I'm sorry, we just have wine." Any other day of the week, any other time of my life, fantastic. It's okay. I don't need water. On the marathon, which was the Saturday, September 2nd, yeah, the water would have been nice. So some thoughts about wine tourism in Bordeaux. I've said before, and I believe this, I think South Africa, Stellenbosch region, is number one for wine tourism. And then we can debate what you think is number two. Maybe it's California. Ontario does a really good job. Germany, surprisingly, does a good job. Like, you know, New Zealand, you can go up and down, you know, west, east, north, south around the globe to decide what your favorite is. Bordeaux is good. My recommendation, though, if you're going to do wine tourism in Bordeaux, I 100% recommend it, but you got to do your work ahead of time. You got to do your research. And you're going to need to make reservations. Now, the good thing is so many of these like legacy vineyards, you can get into them. You can even get into some first growth, some on the left bank. Now, some of the Grand Cru top places on the right bank, they're not going to let you in. I'm just going to tell you that right now. They rarely let anyone in, maybe the odd wine media person, but even that is rare. Now, we were able to get into one of the most famous right bank places, the number one Garista place, the place that started the sort of Garista wine movement, Chateau Vallandrol. And we went there the day after the marathon, and it was incredible. Shout out to Maria, who gave us this great tour. We were able to try wines that were 10, 12, 15 years old, some incredible, almost 20-year-old wine. So it was an incredible array of wines, including the whites. And I've said this many, many times. Don't sleep on white Bordeaux. So we did that on the Sunday. But for anyone traveling, if you go to Bordeaux, you need to spend a day in Saint-Emilion. It's about a 40, 35-minute drive from Bordeaux. And that includes the first 12 minutes where it's impossible to figure out how the hell do we get to a highway. What the hell is Waze doing? Why is it taking us seven different ways to get onto a highway? When we were there, Bordeaux was under a lot of construction. Anyone who lives in Toronto, it's like being in Toronto. Imagine being on Spadina. That's Bordeaux in early September of 2023. But the cool thing is there's all these different wine stores in Saint-Emilion, all these wine bars, and it's not crazy expensive, and you can try so much great stuff. And we went into this one wine bar or wine store, excuse me, Marchand de Soif, S-O-I-F, excuse me if I mispronounce it. Shout out to Andre and the staff there. Myself, my girlfriend Amy, and her twin sister Christy, we spent over an hour there. Andre just kept pouring us wine, trying wine. Oh, try this, try that, blind this, do this, for no cost. Now, we ended up buying a bottle or two, A, because the wines we tried were delicious, but also we sort of felt like we needed to buy something. The man spent like an hour with us and was pouring us all this wine. And so the basic point is not me bragging, but it's just saying, if you are going to go to Bordeaux and if you love wine, you need to go to Saint-Emilion. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. Even if you don't like wine, you know, just take your camera, a billion beautiful pictures. You will love it. The Monday of our trip was fun. We just drove around. We visited one vineyard. And then after that, we just drove around Bordeaux. And you know, you can get lucky. You know, we were driving through Margaux and a third growth that's incredible, Chateau Ferrière. We drove right by them, and so we just wandered in. They had no room. They had reservations, so there wasn't space for us. You know, because we just walked in on Monday at it was like 12 o'clock or something. But the woman in charge, you know, just said, here, you guys want a taste? Which vintage? And we're like, oh, we'll do 2015. And she just poured the three of us, you know, a nice size tasting glass. And it was fantastic. You know, it was just nice. It was this nice moment. So what I appreciate about Bordeaux, and no offense to Burgundy, but anyone from Burgundy listening, you know what I'm saying is true. Burgundy is tough. Burgundy wants nothing to do with tourists. And I get it. They don't make a lot of wine. It's expensive. But more than, again, they don't make a lot of wine. They have very small amounts. So because of that, they're not there, you know, with tasting rooms and come on in and bring a bus or a stag or a stagette. They're like, get out of here. We don't want to see you. They basically hide from you. Bordeaux, because it's higher production, they make more, thousands more bottles per year per, you know, vineyard than in Burgundy. So I get it. But it's just a reminder that Bordeaux is a place that even though you've got to make reservations, you got to work for it. If you put in the work, you will be rewarded. Then Tuesday, we went to three different vineyards, and they all were so different. Like Pichon Baron, which is a classic Medoc second growth. Shout out to Margot. Yes, her name was Margot, the person who was showing us around. You could see Chateau Latour. It was across the street. Like, it was a frisbee throw away. You learn so much when you're touring. It's like, okay, why is Latour so good? Oh, it's because their vines are 500 feet closer to the river than even Pichon Baron. And Baron, I mean, that's a second growth that makes killer wine. Trust me, I brought back a bottle or two. One of them, I think, got like 100 points, but whatever, a point rating. The point is you get, you really get a sense of why Merlot and Cabernet Sauvignon, why these grapes work so well in this area, because you see the slope and the topography and how close to the river and all that kind of stuff. Then we went to Chateau Lichbach, and my Lord, was it modern. And it was this nice little contrast. And I want to apologize. The woman who gave us the tour was the best, like tall and slender. And she felt like she does theater at a regular basis. Like, just her voice, and she could put on different mannerisms and how she explained everything. I mean, it was incredible. It was like being with someone who just won a Tony for Best Actress in Oklahoma and now is suddenly touring us around. And Lichbach is so modern, but yet what I appreciated, they also had this giant room where they had all their old equipment that they used over a century ago. So you got a sense of what was it like to make wine, stomp the grapes, what the fermentation was like everything 100 plus years ago. And then you walk into another room and it's like, look at these, just such modern equipment, facilities, elevators. So just this really cool contrast. And she was wonderful. And then finally, and I'm going to mispronounce it, and apologies to their managing director, who's going to be on this pod soon, Nicholas Sinoke, Chateau Gérard de la Rousse. Yeah, I mispronounced. I'm saying Julien. It's like, I believe a third growth. I should have had that in my notes. I don't. I apologize. If I was taking my test, I would know every first, second, and third growth off by heart. And the cool thing about them and what Nicholas did was right in the middle of the vineyards, he's got this giant viewing tower. You go up like, you go in an elevator up like five stories, and you get up there and you can see all of the Medoc and Saint Julien and the river. And I mean, it's just so cool. You just, all you have is acres and acres and acres of beautiful vineyards around you. But then you look down, you can see the vines, and then you can see the bright colored stones that were all in the vineyards. And you're like, oh, well, it kind of reminds you a little bit of Chateauneuf du Pape, that these rocks that are littered throughout the vineyards, they retain the heat. So at night, the heat from the rocks will you know, sprout out, and it'll allow the grapes to continue to ripen even during cold nights. And it was a cool little thing. It was a nice little reminder. Oh, why does Cabernet work here? Well, it does for a lot of reasons. And one of them is, The rocks are on the vineyards, and it's cool. It's like you can read that in a textbook. When you see it up close, it really helps to put it all in perspective. So again, I can't recommend enough Bordeaux. It is a great place for wine tourism. You do the work, and you will be rewarded. We were in Morocco during the earthquake, the first massive earthquake to hit that country, or the first earthquake at all in like 60 years. We were staying in Marrakesh, but 60, 70 kilometers away from the epicenter of the earthquake. Now, the epicenter in the Atlas Mountains, we actually were in that area 5 hours earlier. You know, we passed through these towns and these villages. We were staying in the desert the night before. And that part for us, I mean, there was a lot of things that were incredibly tragic. That was near the top of the list was, you know, we passed through these beautiful towns we know just got destroyed, got wiped out, because you're talking about high elevation and really just, you know, they were homes and buildings right next to the mountains and stuff on these crazy, you know, slopes. And it was so sad to think about. And the crazy thing about an earthquake is, anyone who hasn't been in one, and this was my first, is that sense of hopelessness. Because when an earthquake starts shaking you around, the first second you try to figure out what the hell's going on. And you come up with wild theories in your head about trains. And you're like, well, there can't be any trains. We're in Marrakesh. We're surrounded by tight alleyways. Then you realize it's an earthquake. And then the next like 12 seconds, you're like a sock in the dryer on Tumble. You know, you're just getting bounced around and there's nothing you can do about it. It's truly, truly scary. I can't say enough about, we were staying at a Riyadh, which is, think of it as part hotel, part bed and breakfast. Just a wonderful place to stay. It's, in Morocco, the Riyadhs, it's a tradition there. And it's, you know, you feel like you're part of a family. And Abdul, the manager, he had a very difficult job of dealing with the customers, dealing with everyone staying there, helping them, guiding us out of the Riyadh to the main area where we stayed at, like a giant public square with like thousands of other people, as we spent 5-6 hours just sitting on the ground waiting until it was safe to go back. But while he was doing his job, he was also on his phone trying to contact his family. How's his mom and dad? How's his friends? Are they alive? So that was certainly not lost on us, the level of professionalism and empathy and care that he extended to all of us as he was trying to make sure that his family was alive. I can't overstate enough just how impressive a human being that he is. We, of course, found a winery near Marrakesh, Le Domaine du Val d'Argent. And if you are in Marrakesh, I cannot recommend it high enough. First off, there's something really cool when you've gone from going to these famous vineyards in Bordeaux. Now you're in Morocco trying these incredible Southern Rhone-styled wines, and there's a camel 100 feet away from you. And the camel is happy when the owner, his name is Charles. I'll talk about him more in a second. When Charles would come by and later Charles would give us carrots and we could feed the camel. It was great. And some of the best goat cheese I've ever tried, and the freshest olives. And, you know, so we tried their portfolio of wines, and it's interesting. They just bring you the wines out. You can drink as much as you want. Their highest end wine, they actually poured it into a decanter. And it definitely reminds me of Cote Roti, because it's Syrah based wine, but the blend has some white. So it'll remind you of Cote Roti with the Syrah and the Viognier, like, you know, the Lala wines. And just this meaty blue fruit, like just beautiful, impressive, full-bodied wines. And the whites were great and just nice medium-bodied and nice finishes. It was impressive. I didn't know what to expect. And you could definitely feel the French influence on these wines. And again, the owner, Charles Milia, he'll be on the podcast. We got to meet with him and chat with him for a while. And he's been in that area for decades and decades and decades. And his family, his father before that. So he has his roots planted in two places, in Southern Rhone and in Marrakesh. And it was wonderful. A couple other thoughts. So that was the trip. A couple other thoughts. I don't think I've talked about it, but anyone who's listened to this pod on a regular basis, and by the way, I appreciate anyone who has listened. One of the first interviews I did was with one of my first wine friends / contacts, a guy named James Latty, who was the owner and the winemaker of Long Dog Winery in Prince Edward County. This was the wines that first got me to really fall in love with Ontario wine. And the funny thing is, I'm trying to remember, how did I go there the first time? How did I find him? I don't even fully remember. And his background, he also was, you know, an editor and did work with Avatar and with, you know, with movies on IMAX and things like that. His Chardonnays and his Pinot Noirs, incredible, incredible wines. He passed away before our trip. He was like 72 years old, and it really hit me. It hit me, it hit Amy, it hit all of us, because this man was so nice. And my friends, my friends, Tim and Dave Peary, you know, I'd go, we would go every year. We still do, to Prince Edward County. And the first stop was always, well, let's go to Long Dog, because James was going to take time out of his day. and he's going to take us to the vineyards, and he's going to take us into the cellar, and he's going to get the wine thief out, and we're going to try every barrel. And by the way, they don't even have any wine right now available. Everything's still in barrel because he keeps his wine in barrel longer than the average Ontario winery. It's impressive that he does it. It's very commendable. So like a little while ago, just opening up one of his wines that I have is 2017 Bella Bella Reserva Chardonnay. I've never been so sad to drink a Chardonnay that I loved as much as this. And it's big. It's when I say full throttle, let me say the acidity, the balance, it's there. But it's a big wine. You know, it's like this is the wine for Chardonnay drinkers who question what Canada and Ontario can do. I'm like, all right, try this. And you'll love it. But the structure is there. The acidic structure is there where you could get fooled. You could go, oh, Premier Cru Burgundy. It wouldn't be a problem at all going there. So I want to give a shout out. If you haven't heard that interview, it's just Google Matt Talks Wine and James Lahti, Lahti. It's one of my favorite interviews, even though he kept the mic so far from his mouth. I spent hours having to edit that, but just a cool story from a guy that was so passionate about wine, did it his own way. He was a maverick, and I'm keeping an eye on what happens next with Long Dog. One of those wines being released from barrel, like I'm going to be circling that, like Jaws around the Orca, you know, trying to get Shaw and is it not George Shaw? Who was Shaw? Oh, I should remember this. Quint. I mean, the character's name in Jaws with Quint and him and Roy Scheider and Richard Dreyfuss. Yeah, rest in peace to James, who died far too young, and a credit to Canadian wine. Two other things before I end. I want to give a shout-out to Blue Blood Restaurant in Casa Loma. We went there the other day just for a drink. We were doing their Legends of Horror Halloween thing that's going on at Casa Loma. And by the way, it was great. If you're in Toronto or near Toronto and you love Halloween and haunted houses, you got to go. Trust me, you got to go to Casa Loma. I love good service. I'm not the guy that leaves immediately when service is bad. Also, when service isn't that good, I don't complain. I first assume that the servers, the staff, someone's sick. They're understaffed that night. Someone's having a bad night. I'll always give the benefit of the doubt until proven otherwise. And I won't say a thing. But on the other end, good service is something you don't forget because restaurants are so expensive now. Good restaurants are so expensive. And I get it why people can't go. You don't go as often. It's, you know, you're paying so much. And I imagine a lot of people listening haven't had good raises in the last couple of years. But just a shout out to the staff of Blue Blood. They're incredible. You know, same thing with like Don Alfonso and all these other places, like just so attentive. And Jacqueline, who was working front of house, just one of the greeters. She was helping us where to go for the Halloween event. And she's like, oh, I'll walk you guys down to it. And we're like, no, we don't need that. Like just so shout out to them. And then finally, shout out to one of the wine consignment companies, Mark Anthony Wine and Spirits, been around since 1972. I went to one of their tastings on about a week ago. And it was great. Like just got to try wines from all over the world, including some crazy expensive wines, some famous wines. And I appreciate that because, you know, when you're going to buy stuff, if you're going to be spending money, you want to try the goods if you can ahead of time. So I wanted to give a quick tip. If you ever get invited, and a lot of people, you go all the time, but if you ever get invited to like where you get to try the portfolio, try the wines, if you can, show up right when it opens, because eventually it'll get packed. But show up right when it opens, and right when it opens, immediately, if there is Burgundy, go to the Burgundy section. I cannot stress this enough because when you go to wine events like this, where the portfolio tastings, where you know you can try from all these producers from all over the world, think of Burgundy, other famous regions like parts of Bordeaux or Napa Cab. Think of it as if you were going to Canada's Wonderland. Where are the lineups? The lineups are on the roller coasters. Think of Burgundy as Behemoth or Leviathan. There's always going to be a long lineup. And they had this crazy selection of wines from Maison Louis Latour. And I mean, we're talking about some wines that are $400 from Grand Cru stuff to, you know, their basic Bourgogne Pinot Noir. By the way, their basic Bourgogne Pinot and Chardonnay were really good. Shout out for those. My favorite, actually, and if you can find this, the Louis Latour Saint-Aubin Premier Cru. I can't find the, but it's not cheap. It's still $95. Okay, that's not cheap. I know that. That's expensive, but really, really good. And let's face it, Burgundy's always expensive. If you can find that one, you could throw it away for 20 years. You can open it now. By the way, decant your Chardonnays, kids. I can't stress that enough. So make sure to decant your Chardonnays. Shout out to Mission Hill. I think my favorite wine is still $100, but the Checkmate Endgame 2019 Merlot was fantastic. I'm definitely going to be picking up some of that. The other cool thing is you get to try famous wines that you've never had before. And for me, it was all about Chile. It was about the Vinedo, Chadwick, and the Signa. These are two of the most famous wines in Chile. And the Signa, which is Bordeaux blend, the Chadwick, which is like 96-97% Cabernet Sauvignon, and the rest I think is a little bit of Petit Verdot. And these are pricey wines, but I have to tell you, the Chadwick, it's $400. That's a lot. That's a ton of money. But the power of this wine was all there, and the chocolate and the tobacco and the cigar and the this and the that and the plum and the cassis and all those stupid terms you've heard 100 times. They're all there. And they're all in balance, you know, like a well-made puzzle. But what really stood out was the freshness at the end. You smell a wine, it's big and powerful. So you get in your head thinking, okay, I know what this is going to be. I know that, and it might grab on to my taste buds, my palate. It might drown it, or it might drag it down a little bit. A big wine, you know, like some ports or Amarones, where it just grabs you. But this wine, it did all that. But then at the end, it released you. You know, it's like catch and release. The acidity, the freshness. I mean, this is like, I got to tell you, like I talk about this before. I talk about this all the time. My favorite Napa cabs are the ones that can be both big and bold, but that at the end, there's freshness there that make me want to have a second and dare I say a third glass because, you know, it doesn't weigh you down. Wow. That Chadwick 100% did that. So a shout out to them and a shout out to Mark Anthony and just being able to go and try all these wines. To me, it's always an honor. It's not a, hey, let's drink for free. That's fun. Now, drinking for free, trying wines from all over the world, from even the odd country or producers I haven't tried before. Yeah, that is fun. The fact it's free, you know what? Yeah, not the worst thing in the world. But there's an honor there because you get to talk to, you know, some of the people are just, you know, in charge of sales. And I don't mean that in a bad way. Sales is hard. Sales is really, really hard. And these are people that have often been associated and have worked with these vineyards for years. And then you get to talk to some owners or some winemakers and you feel this real connection to it. And so for me, it's an honor and a pleasure because A, you get educated and you learn and you grow and your palate expands. And I love that kind of stuff. And then on top of that, you get to try some really killer wine, you know, a little northeastern Italian Pinot Noir, which is always fun. So a shout out to them. Anyway, okay, I'm going to wrap it up here. But as I said, there's going to be, I've been away for a month and I hate that. There's going to be some winemakers, some people that have had a massive influence with me in the world of wine, wine competition winners. I got a lot of stuff set up coming up in the next little while. And as I said, I'm going to dig around, find cool people, find cool stories to deliver to you. I appreciate so much everyone who listens, everyone who downloads, subscribes, and all that kind of stuff. So again, please check out the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff podcast. Tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell everyone in between to have a listen to it. The next couple months is going to be a lot of fun. And I think every now and then I will do these individual ones. And this one's a little bit longer. I'm seeing now that it's hitting 30 minutes. So I'll try to keep them to 20. Maybe like wines that I tried recently that I really liked that I would recommend for everyone to give a shot for. So anyway, that'll do it. Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks wine and stuff. I'm not going to say with interesting people podcast because I'm the person. I'm like, oh, Matt's so interesting. So just thanks for listening to the podcast. You can find me on Spotify. I think Stitcher is gone now, which absolutely stinks. I love Stitcher, but like Spotify, Apple, Audio Boom, wherever you find your podcast, you're going to find me. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.